I mean, Cooper, it is now 5:30.
Might have been weekend.
Okay.
Saturday and Sunday.
All right. Good evening, and I'd like to welcome you to the Engineering and Operations Committee meeting of the Santa Clarita Valley Water Agency for October 24th, 2023. Before we get started, let me first give you the script. This meeting is being conducted in person at the Summit Circle Engineering Services Section Boardroom. As a convenience to the public, members of the public may also participate virtually by logging into the agency's Zoom meeting. Any member of the public may listen to the meeting or make comments to the committee using the call-in number of Zoom webinar link. In the event there is a disruption of service which prevents the agency from broadcasting the meeting to members of the public, using either the call-in option or internet-based service, this meeting will not be postponed or rescheduled, will continue without remote participation. The remote participation option is being provided as a convenience to the public and is not required. Members of the public are welcome to attend the meeting in person. To participate in public comment from your computer, tablet, or smartphone, when I announce the agenda item you wish to speak on, click the raise hand feature in Zoom. You will be notified when it is your turn to speak. Please unmute when requested. To participate in public comment via phone, when I announce the agenda item you wish to speak on, dial *9 to raise your hand. Phone participants will be called on by the last two digits of the phone number or by name. When it is your turn to speak, dial *6 to unmute. Public that are present, please fill out a card, speaker's card, that are on the outside table. The procedure for tonight's meetings are as follows. I'll introduce each agenda item, staff will present, I'll ask for public comments, I'll then ask for discussion and questions from the committee members. The committee then comes to a consensus to move this item to the board for consideration. Any PowerPoints that are shown tonight will be posted on the SCV Water website. And with that, we will move on to the Pledge of Allegiance. Please stand and join in the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Item two is public comments. Liz, are there any members of the public outside?
Seeing none.
Very good. And I guess at this point, you have something else that you would like to do at the committee.
Yes, I wanted to introduce the committee to two new staff members we have. Roy and Vanessa are two new admins replacing Margaret and Katie, who moved on to other departments, not realizing how great our department actually is. And so we are lucky to have them at the agency. It's been about 6 weeks, and they started on the exact same day.
So, wow. That's welcome.
Yes, thank you very much.
It's good to be here.
I'm sure you'll enjoy working here. This is a pretty good organization.
Yeah.
And where did Margaret
go? So Margaret went to Water Resources. And Katie went over to finance.
Well, we'll try not to hold that against them. Okay, with item number three, quarterly safety presentation.
Okay, you can see me now.
Welcome to stay, and if you'd like to go, we understand because we would like to.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes, yes, we can.
Okay, perfect. Okay, thank you. Well, good evening, board members, E&O committee members. I'm Rebecca Lustig, Environmental Health and Safety Supervisor for Santa Clarita Valley Water. This is the safety update for the first quarter of the 2023-2024 fiscal year, which covers July 1st to September 30th of 2023. Next slide, please. So during this first quarter, safety engaged in the following routine activities. So these are our standard meetings. We do weekly safety tailgates. We visit work sites and facilities monthly, checking on a variety of work site issues. And we have the safety committee meetings with supervisors. Over the quarter, we did it monthly. We did, however, decide that we're going to transition to every other month for a variety of reasons, some of which are that we have a number of monthly meetings, and oftentimes the monthly meetings, we don't really have enough time to sort of move forward with things that we identified the month before. And so this gives us more time to actually do some work and give some more substantive updates. We participated in construction and pre-construction meetings for active ongoing projects. We did new hire safety trainings and emergency orientations, so introducing new staff, such as Roy and Vanessa here, to the safety department, who we are. We collect information from them for safety record keeping, get their safety equipment and PPE and training needs, and show them the safety resources available to them on Aquifer and assign them online safety courses. We also do the in-person life safety and emergency evacuation orientation. We also participate in regulatory compliance activities, such as facilitating hazardous waste removal, including universal waste. During this quarter, we updated the site spill prevention and countermeasures control plans for the sites that have above-ground fuel tanks, and facilitated Kona cranes coming in and doing the quarterly crane inspections. Next slide, please. So this is our trainings, projects, and activities broken down by month over this first quarter. Each month, Joe hosted a CPR and first aid class because he's certified. We're able to kind of spread those out, and staff can attend or change up their date of attendance according to their own schedule. And the goal is to get the majority of people trained up. Requirements would be for field staff to get CPR and first aid trained and for our safety monitors, but these classes are open to anybody in the agency, and their certifications are good for 2 years. In July, we completed our wire rope inspections for rigging equipment and identified a number of replacements. And in July, we also did a heavy operator and spotter safety training at Golden Triangle. And we actually did those in August as well. In August, the safety staff actually took some classes for ourselves to get more information and get certified on how to be FEMA trainers. Joe is actually one class away from being a certified trainer through the California Standardized Training Institute. And when that happens, we're going to start doing more of those internal trainings for staff to get them up to date on FEMA and incident command system training and beyond, depending on their job title and their role and what their role will be during a disaster. In September, another event was doing annual first aid kit services at all sites and vehicles, and also the annual fire extinguisher inspection and service at all sites and in all vehicles. So this is a multi-day production at all different work sites, the main manned work sites and offices, but also all of the fire extinguishers from remote sites disinfection facilities. Those fire extinguishers were brought in by staff and were inspected at a variety of different warehouses. So in total, about 340 extinguishers were inspected and either serviced, recharged, or replaced. But either way, they're all in September, they were all certified as being good to go. We also had safety staff take a hazardous waste class in order to enhance knowledge and storage handling and characterizing and record keeping for hazardous wastes. Help facilitate some sludge sampling at Rio and Earl Schmidt. And this was for taking additional samples to do the T-clip testing to determine if the sludge from the drying beds was not just a hazardous waste, but a RCRA or federal hazardous waste, which in this case, it turned out to be not federal, not RCRA, and so it's a California only. And also in September, on September 27th, SCV Water held a health and wellness fair for staff, and safety department was given the opportunity to have a table there. So we set up a couple of tables and we were able to provide information to staff on health, safety, and emergency preparedness resources. That included giving them a bit of an update on the safety page and also that we created a new emergency resources page in Aquifer to provide them with some training information and also to give them access to the emergency documentation and policies that SCV Water has. Next slide, please. Here are our safety metrics for the first quarter. We see a summary of some meetings during this quarter and safety staff conducting safety inspections at all sites during the quarter. So we have our inspections, both monthly or monthly, quarterly, and annual inspections, either safety staff, vendors, or regulatory compliance. And our safety meetings, we included, these are weekly tailgates, safety committee, construction, pre-construction, emergency preparedness, regular meetings, but also any project-specific meetings that we were called in by staff in order to give either a job hazard analysis or to provide any safety perspective on an issue. We also had accompanied a vendor for quarterly inspections, as I mentioned earlier, for crane inspections, and also the annual fire or quarterly and annual fire suppression system checks. Next slide, please. This is our incident data for the first quarter, a number of reportable and recordable incidents. We had just one recordable incident during this quarter, and this was a minor laceration that required stitches, and we had no reportable incidents. So there was nothing that was considered to be severe. Next slide, please. So here we see our safety metrics for vehicles. We conducted 13 vehicle-related training sessions during this quarter, whether it's about equipment on vehicles or driving safety itself, and vehicle-related incidents. There is actually an error right here. As I look back through the numbers again, there weren't five this quarter. There were four. So we I overestimated one. We had one incident in July, a vehicle that was parked too close to one of our automatic gates, and the gate scraped the side of the truck cab. One incident in August where staff was at a tank site in a tight space, and as they were backing up, they hit a bollard. Two incidents in September, one of which was staff had parked too close to a fuel tank and then scraped the door of their toolbox cabinet against the bollard. And the second incident was staff stopped at a red light and unfortunately was rear-ended by a member of the public who was not paying attention. So four incidents, one was not agency staff fault, three could have used a little more attention and training for staff, and they were assigned safe backing and classes in vector solutions. And we also conducted safety training tailgates for the entire work groups on tips for driving in strong winds, safe backing, the importance of, if you can, to not back into a spot or to back into a spot so that when you leave, you can just pull straight forward, and the importance of properly securing doors and tools, and also pre-trip inspections and making sure that your path of travel is clear when you're leaving a site. Next slide, please. First quarter emergency preparedness activities. We have our monthly alert media testing. We attended the local emergency preparedness committee meeting, Region 1 committee meeting. That was on August 9th. City of Santa Clarita emergency preparedness group for the quarter. And some trainings, emergency management concepts, all hazards, and recovery from disasters, local role. So those are some trainings that safety staff attended at the LA County Office of Emergency Management. And continuing to work on some of our internal resources, we're with doing our updates to the emergency response plan based off of the Division of Drinking Water template. So moving pretty far along with that. And we've also, as I mentioned earlier, did a new page in Aquifer SharePoint that showcases emergency resources for staff. So they have always have accessibility to that. Next slide, please. Here are our upcoming safety and emergency trainings. Incident Management Team and Emergency Preparedness Activities. So you'll hear about this during the next quarterly update, but we did have another meeting for our Incident Management Team to go over a little more finer points of preparing for disasters, including identifying staff as disaster service workers, the type of training that they're going to need, and also making sure that we have our procurement policy in disasters is going to facilitate us getting grants if we ever were to seek one, if we've suffered tremendous losses during an event. We're also attending some meetings, so Local Emergency Planning Committee, Region 1. That fourth quarter meeting is in November. It's in just a couple of weeks. We have our ongoing efforts to try and give our staff the best-in-class safety culture with our trainings, inspections, and always available for any questions and comments from staff. Continuing with RMP revisions and updating our safety manual. So right now, we updated our injury and illness prevention plan that went live. I did a training video to introduce it to staff, and that's currently posted. And we're currently working on updating the safety manual, revising existing plans, and also we're adding some new ones to close some of those gaps that we've identified. We have some special training events in 2023 and into 2024. But for this next quarter coming up, October, we did some forklift train the trainer classes. November, we are going to be doing some hands-on fire extinguisher safety training. And in December, identifying people who need to do their HAZWOPR refresher, which is a required 8-hour refresher class to maintain that certification. And next slide, please. So that is all. I just wanted to end with this. This is our table that we set up at the Health and Wellness Fair. So they gave us two tables. We had a bunch of information set up for emergency preparedness and some giveaways. And then the other table, we just had some basic any kind of warehouse driving, office safety about lifting ergonomics, and just wanted to really showcase what the safety department does for SVV staff and how they can get in contact with us if they have any questions or concerns. And I am open to any questions that you have now.
Very good. Thank you, Rebecca. Liz, any questions from the outside?
Seeing none.
Very good. Questions from the committee?
Yeah, just a quick question. HAZWOPR refresher training. I'm not familiar with that acronym. What is that?
Oh, HAZWOPR is a hazardous waste operations and emergency response. So there's different types of HAZWOPR training that's required in California Code of Regulations Title 8, depending on whether you are an emergency responder, you work at a disposal treatment facility, or you just simply are around those materials and possibly are going to have to identify or respond to it at least initially. If a spill occurs, most of our staff, in fact, all of our staff is kind of identified in that last category, is that they're going to be around it and they're going to need to know how to immediately respond, even if it's just containing it before notifying authorities in order to come and do a more robust response or to contact an outside vendor to do a more thorough cleanup.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
And quick question. So the fair that's that you've provided a picture for, is that a SCB water facility? Where was the fair taken? Where did it take place?
The fair was at the, I just know it's off of Center Point. It is, what's it called?
The center.
Where the city's facility.
But the city's
above the aquatic center.
Okay.
Aquatic center.
Okay. And back to you, Chair.
Thank you.
No questions, but thank you, Rebecca, for the presentation.
Of course.
Rebecca, one acronym I'm curious about is the LEPC, or LEPC committee. What is that? Is that a formation from the county or?
Local Emergency Preparedness Committee. It's more than the county. So different regions. I believe we're in region one. Area B. But it's coordinated through the state Cal OES and identifies different different regions, and you're kind of grouped together by county. Sometimes it splits through counties, but it's going to be people from industry and utilities like us, and also firefighters, law enforcement. Anybody that kind of has a hand in emergency response, they come together quarterly and talk about regulations coming up. Usually somebody gives a presentation on something going on in their jurisdiction, and sort of like a forum to kind of talk about issues and things that are in and around emergency response, FEMA, incident command.
Rebecca, a couple of questions. Vehicle accidents. We installed rear cameras on all the vehicles, didn't we?
I believe so, yes. So actually, I was just speaking with Jesus, the fleet supervisor, and he was saying that they're looking into some of those cameras and seeing if there's a possibility of needing to switch some of them out because they're noticing people are having problems with them. But go ahead with your question. Sorry.
That was just it. I noticed the one they backed into the bollard. But I was hoping that they would look at their cameras. The other one you talked about, designating people as a disaster response. Do our ID cards show that as disaster response?
They do not currently. That is a discussion that we've been opening up. We actually have it in the employee manual. Rochelle was kind enough to find it for me. It's in the employee manual where it refers to a California Emergency Response Act, which is where that term disaster service worker is located, and that we do identify agency staff that would fall into that category. There's actually quite a bit of, there's paperwork that goes along with it. There's some question, which I'm waiting for Rochelle to get a response back from checking with legal about legacy staff, and whether or not those agreements were signed before, and how are we identifying people? So it doesn't currently say it, but the plan is that whoever is going to be required to provide some sort of response during a disaster is identified as a disaster service worker, and on their ID card, we're going to have that language so that it shows it for them, but it shows it also if they need to access areas that are closed off to the general public.
I know after the Northridge earthquake, we had a lot of us designated as disaster response, and some that weren't, and they had to really talk to get themselves through some of the roadblocks. So that would really be helpful, I'm sure, in a disaster.
Yep, and we are working towards that. Absolutely.
Good. Thank you very much. Appreciate the quarterly report. Anybody?
Thank
else?
You.
Great. Thank you, Rebecca.
Hey, thank you.
Okay, item 4, 10-year capital improvement project plan. I imagine that's why Rochelle's here, is figuring out how to pay for it.
That is somewhat correct. thank you, Chair Cooper, Engineering Committee members. I'm Gordon Mill, Chief Engineer for Santa Clarita Valley Water Agency, and presenting the revised 10-year CIP to you today. I apologize ahead of time. This is a very spreadsheet-heavy presentation. A lot of projects to represent, and if we tried to add a graphic or photo for each one, we'd be here for a very long time. Next slide, please. So this is the 10-year CIP summary. This is also the format that I'm going to be using throughout, so I'm going to describe what each of the columns is for and represents, and then you'll see that we break it down into spreadsheet with about 8 to 10 projects on each page. As we go through the all of the projects. And I tried to lump the projects together so you can see where the focus areas are and where we've taken some money out. From this slide, looking left to right, the first one is the list of CIP projects from February of 2023. The significance of this is the dollar amount we use to forecast rates that was presented to the board. So that allowed us to give a projection of where we were going and on our rates. The next one was from July of 2023. This is after finding out about new MCLs related to PFAS and the additional impact to our wells as well as taking the opportunity to revisit our entire CIP list, upgrade actual cost, add additional projects that we've noticed since that point. So although February to July is not a long time, there were a lot of changes that needed to happen and reprioritization or new projects that we listed in that. So we took that list of the $1.1 billion to the Finance Administration Committee, and they let us know that they would like us to revisit our capital improvement plan and reprioritize and try to stick within the forecasted rates that were provided from February. So staff took that opportunity to go back again to look at that list, an all-hands approach of all the different departments reviewing the CIP list and creating a priority. And you'll see that the projects are prioritized from 1 to 3. And generally speaking, if you reached a 3 priority, we probably aren't planning on doing that project in the next 10 years. Some of the 2s did make it in, and some of the 2s did. You know, we'll try to highlight those as we go along. The next line in here shows the, as of last month, oh my gosh, October is last month already. As of last month, the new 10-year CIP, and you'll see the staff was able to get really close to the original forecasted amount, but we need to show you how. What does that impact? What projects? And so this meeting is really about going over the list of projects and where we felt we could defer to a future 10 years. And so the last column is the impact of that. Deferring some of the projects obviously has a financial impact, and we wanted to get you at least a general idea of scope, projecting out 10 years and trying to calculate what the amount is or what new projects may or may not be coming in is a difficult task. But we did try to line it out on each of these slides so you would see that by pushing these projects out, we do still have an obligation eventually to do the work. The projects still will eventually need to be necessary. Some of them may actually go away in the 10 years as we take more time for study and analysis. And we're hoping that's the case, but in all likelihood, we will also see new projects coming in. So with that, we'll go to the first slide. This is the emergency storage slide. We've been wrestling with this for quite a while, trying to figure out where to put emergency storage and what projects. These are large reservoirs that provide a lot of water storage. We have one that is finished with design and preparing to go to construction. And that's the Backcountry Reservoir up at the Five Point or Newhall Land Development. This project is the only emergency storage on the west side. So we are continuing to move forward. We're already pretty far along, and that includes a pump station to go along with that project. So those projects are going to continue. We're also going to continue the planning for the Sand Canyon Reservoir expansion. All of the other emergency storage projects we had on this list, and you can see some of them even expanded from February to July when we looked at it a little closer, those have all been deferred to the next 10-year window. As you know, we are looking at this as part of our master plan as to where we can do emergency storage, and our hope is that we can find other avenues to either reduce the scope or eliminate some of the locations for emergency storage. And some of that consideration may be incorporating emergency storage into development sites or reevaluating how we assess what our emergency storage is by looking at our groundwater supplies, et cetera. So good opportunity for this delay, good opportunity for us to reevaluate. But in order to really assess, we wanted to make sure we also included the cost. You can also notice when we look at the next 10 year, the fiscal year 34 to 43, we did add an escalator in cost, knowing that cost will increase. And we did that throughout the various slides as we move through. Next slide, please.
And Sand Canyon Reservoir was...
Sand Canyon Reservoir is an existing emergency storage reservoir, and the intention was to do an expansion or a retrofit on that, but we feel it could be delayed for another 10 years, although we will continue to do the analysis in these in this 10-year period. Next, we get into pipeline and replacement. You notice this one doesn't have a total at the bottom. It's because we have multiple sheets of pipeline replacements. Starting up on top, we have our general program that is done by both operations and engineering. This is our pool of money that we pull specific projects from. Once we have a specific project, our pipeline identified, and we can identify a budget for it, we draw it out of that pool and then place it down below to give it an actual number and cost and location. So you'll see a lot of the locations, they don't include a lot of the operations work. What we did here, obviously, pipeline relocation is a priority, but not every pipeline's the same. Not everyone has the same priority. So we did go down and evaluate them individually. We also, as a general total, decided to reduce and spread that over the 20-year window because it matches what we are currently able to achieve. We are currently able to do roughly $4 to $5 million in pipeline relocation per year, and that's our target. And if you see, we are going to have to ramp up. We listed that same line item again in the next 10-year fiscal year to include an additional $50 million so that we're going up to $8 million a year, roughly, in pipeline relocation, because we recognize in order to keep up with the aging system, we are going to have to be replacing more pipe. This, again, is another area that the master plan is going to help us with. Hopefully, with asset management and risk management, we are able to, our risk assessment, we are able to better identify and reduce in scope and accurately identify before failure. Obviously, the risk on this is that if you aren't replacing and you're reacting to breaks, you are going to pay more money. But we believe we can manage this workload and continue pipe relocation at our current effort.
External agency mandates.
Yeah, we added that line item in the July because we noticed that when the city is doing storm drain work or other projects, it can easily increase our costs. A good example of that, we have a $250,000 cost in here because the city decided to put a acceleration lane next to the Henry Mayo Hospital. And that acceleration lane impacted the pipeline that lies underneath it, made it so an ACP pipeline had less than 2 feet of cover. And we're obligated to pay for that relocation at our expense because we are in the right of way and the city has superior rights. So we've added a budget that gives us the room to do that. If any of that budget were not used by the end of the 10 year, most likely that would roll into additional pipeline replacement projects. Next slide, please. So that first slide really included all of the changes that we did. Beyond that, all of the projects we've started, all of the things we are working on in pipeline replacement are priority. We have already identified them and we need to work on them. And so they are remaining within the budget. We did escalate some of the costs or modify some of the costs. I don't think we see any on this page, but I think on the next one you do, where we actually did update with additional information. And obviously between February and July, we assigned some additional costs and really had a better grasp on what it was going to cost to do some of those projects in pipeline. Still an important item, still something we are focusing on. Next slide, please. And lastly, again, we're just continuing with our pipeline. You can see the total. Overall, we did go down as a total, even from the February numbers. And some of that spread into the second 10-year period on the amount of pipelines. And again, that will be modified by the master plan and our asset management as we move forward on pipeline replacement. Am I going too fast? Am I got a good pace? It's a lot of projects to go over, so I appreciate it. Next slide, please. Thank you. So well installation and treatment. This includes PFAS, which is probably our single largest increase in cost since February. And it has related to the new MCLs, or maximum contaminant limits, that we are evaluating for all. We are now evaluating all of our wells for treatment. If we're going down the list and you're seeing this, the well Saugus wells 5 and 6, we had originally planned to do both of those in the 10-year period. We thought it was more prudent to split those up between the 2 years with an escalator into the second year for the Saugus well 6. This also still corresponds with our urban water management plan and compliance. Going down from there, the next three on the list, you notice they were listed at $14 million for treatment in the next 10 years, and that's been completely eliminated. They haven't actually been eliminated. Those wells are associated with other wells. And in our effort to manage costs, we're looking at those as a combined project. So the entire project will not equal 28 million. It's more likely to be 15 to 17 million if we're able to merge sites for treatment. As an example, well 207 will be treated with well 206, which is nearby. So you'll see those appear again at the bottom of the spreadsheet as an add-in item. Just wanted to let you know where those went. Obviously, well treatment and water groundwater supply is a priority. But when we go through, if you look at the Clark well, not all of them have the same priority. Clark is an older well and may not have the same production as other wells. So although we are continuing to do the preliminary analysis, which we've come to the committee for to review these sites, we do not anticipate that we will do treatment for those at this time. And although the well D and well W10 are higher priority wells to maintain, what we are going to do is potentially look at those as to whether or not, instead of providing treatment at those well sites, are we able to plumb to other sites, or are we able to use the volume of water produced at those wells and produce it at another well location without paying for the treatment? So even though we shifted those costs to the next 10-year plan, they may not occur if we're able to find another solution that maintains our groundwater production and without having to build additional treatment sites. So another opportunity for us to improve on that with additional study. Wells 14 and 16, these are site improvements that related to five-point development, and we've shifted that cost off to the next 10 years with the assumption that we will have some work with five-point responsible to do some of that work. That may have to come back depending on where it's at. There's also separate line items for the E-wells that include the treatment, and that would be a combined treatment site after we do individual E-well site improvements or before we do individual E-well site improvements. Next slide, please. The majority of the other wells that we've already studied and done analysis on are moving forward. You can see they're all, again, priority one. So we tried to organize this in a way that was made sense. You can also see that Valley Center, from February to July, we had $500,000, and that went away because we spent it and we finished the well. So those are some of the ideas we updated. We also noticed that the original estimates of $14 million were not really accurate. We're having a lot of additional costs associated with these projects and the availability of the vessels. And so we increased those costs proportionately or appropriately for the July of 23. And then we carried those over again into the current list that we're proposing today. Next slide. So here are the totals of the PFAS wells. Obviously, in February, we started with only 140,000. That had to do with the limited number of wells we were examining. In February of 23, we looked at it at its every single well would be treated. And then when we got to the more refined one list for today, we were able to pare some of that down and are taking a little more conservative approach to doing additional analysis to see if we can eliminate or defer the cost of those treatments and maintain our well supply moving forward. And then next slide, please. So recycled water. We did not have too many changes. The single main change that we did have, or two main changes we did have, was to push Reach 2 of Phase 2C to the next 10-year period. What we are having an issue with is getting the end users on board, and it doesn't make sense for us to continue to install and invest in infrastructure until those end users are signed on, or we are relatively certain that we will have them signed on. So that project was deferred. We are still planning to build phase one of that reach, which will get us the majority of the water use. And you can see that occur again later on, where we had 1.8 million for conversion, and we've shifted and put about 500,000 for conversion into the next 10-year period, which would allow us to continue the conversion process for the phase two once we have some clients and some users. The Recycled water fill station is the other one. We're still analyzing the sites and still determining the feasibility, but it determined that that particular facility would have a lower priority due to value added from a recycled water use in that location. So those are the only two recycled water projects we really shifted off, but it was a significant reduction from the $45 million. That we prepared in July, obviously a little bit of an increase from the $17 million we had in February. And then that cost was shifted to the next 10 years if we have end users. Next slide, please. So booster pump stations, pump and booster stations, we reevaluated these, and the lower priority ones that we shifted in this case all had a development component to them, meaning the driving force behind the actual cost of that facility was a developer, and we were contemplating participation. Because we cannot guarantee or really have no advanced schedule on these particular projects, we had a feeling that they are less priority because we don't believe that they will necessarily move forward in the next 10-year period. If they do move forward, then we have a couple options to work with the developers via reimbursement agreement through capacity fee sales or coming back to the board for additional monies beyond the scope of our 10-year budget and approve if we feel like those developers are moving forward. Any projects that we did have the developers in-house with plans, we kept on the list so that we could take advantage of the working with the developers to get a larger facility at a reduced cost and work saving the ratepayers that extra cost. But for the pump station, booster stations, as well as tanks, we removed any facilities that we weren't certain were going to move forward in the next 10 years.
Hold on, before you continue, Chair, if I may. For the following decade, those prices seem the same as our 24 to 33. They're not adjusted on inflation basis and
cost structure. We didn't inflate these. These are all going to be developer based and a percentage of the project. They could have been considered for inflation, but we didn't put that in this instance. Okay. We really don't know the actual cost until those go to bid. It's really a percentage basis of the project that when it goes out.
Understood.
We've done our best to update them, but we're not.
Okay.
Not sure. I know we have seen a lot of increase in costs lately. So,
understood. Thank you.
Next slide, please. And as stated with the tanks, we did move the two tanks that were proposed to the next 10-year period because we did not have a defined time of when they would be needed, and therefore they are lower priority than the other projects we have listed. The tank and storage facility improvement program that has to do with recoding and maintenance of the tanks from operations. And we did copy that cost over in total to the current CIP and then increased it for the next CIP just by a standard escalation. Next slide, please. Water treatment plants. On this one, all of our water treatment plants, this is a supply-related project, and so they are all a high priority, with the exception of the Earl Schmidt filtration plant, battery storage project. We're doing the battery storage project at Rio Vista, and the Earl Schmidt one was determined not to pencil out. So we pushed it out to 10 years to leave the budget in case we wanted to reevaluate, but we determined it was a lower priority for this project. The rest of the tank projects we included, and again, are the treatment plant. And then again, we included the disinfection system improvement in that. There is one project that we will see on the next slide where we added a cost that wasn't in February or July. This was the turbidity issue we had at the treatment plant. We met with a consultant and had a preliminary analysis of what we would be doing to address the turbidity issue and what was causing the turbidity issue. So it took us a while to get that report back. We've now reviewed that report and we have a preliminary estimate of what it would cost to do a repair. They believe a lot of the turbidity has to do with the fact that the lake levels were very low and a lot of the silt was a runoff from the actual banks of the reservoir. And so the impact is only really impacting us when those conditions are just so, where the reservoirs are low and it's going to have a storm coming in. So again, that was viewed as a lower priority, not something we wanted to tackle in this 10-year, but we wanted to include that in the next 10-year plan as potential for resolution. And we did include budget in this 10-year plan to make sure we had a good design and knew what we were going to be getting into in order to make those improvements if we decided to move in that direction. It's a lot of talking. Water supply resiliency, this has to do with the obviously a top priority, and it has to do with our water banking. We're not sure why. From February to July, we lost the $20 million from sites, but we put that back in. It is a not sure that we would have all of that or if it's an escalated fee from there, but we do know we're going to have to be investing in these banking programs and offsite water supply for water resiliency. And those costs escalate quite a bit moving into the future. We put a rough number of $80 million for both of the sites and for AVEC, although some of that could be finance or spread out over time, and there are different options on how to pursue that. And so we would have some folks from Water Resources if there were some additional questions on these items as we move forward, but I know we've addressed them quite a bit with the board on the importance of obtaining imported supply and resiliency in that supply. Next slide, please. I didn't know where to put these guys. This is the rest of the projects we have, our asset management program that we are going to have to maintain. We actually took that out of this list because it is in the budget for the IT and finance group that are managing that. And so we have a team together, so we didn't need to duplicate that cost. So fortunately, we were able to remove that. We had a few adjustments, but overall, these miscellaneous projects had already been evaluated. The ones that had been removed from the list were the water conservation and education garden at the Rio Vista treatment plant or Rio Vista offices. And then again, the Dean SC6 Soledad pipeline improvement, which we believe didn't need to be replaced at this time and could be deferred. I guess I probably should have put that one into pipeline, but it made it into miscellaneous. Next slide, please. So the rest of these here are just duplications of, you know, carrying on what our current budget is for technology and replacements and for office improvements, and then providing an escalator in the 10-year plan. And none of these were reduced. We only saw some increases and then a duplication in the next 10 years where we're carrying on that program. So not a huge change in the miscellaneous projects from before. That is the summary of our 10-year CIP in a very broad and fast fashion. A lot of work we have planned. And I believe that at that $748 million over the next 10 years is an achievable amount of work for our agency to do.
Liz, any questions from outside?
Seeing none.
Questions from the committee?
Yeah, can you go back on the first slide of miscellaneous?
Yes, let me share the screen again.
Those are big numbers, Ben. I just got to remind myself it's 10 years in your planning. The equipment and vehicle resilience improvements, we're looking at $24 million here. That includes vehicles and infrastructure to service them, right?
Correct. That includes the EV regulations for infrastructure.
Is it just electrical vehicles? Does it also include potentially hydrogen and, well, not hydrogen, but?
Mostly just EV and just regular gas vehicles and infrastructure.
Okay.
slide before this one? Why are these included in ours? These are not engineering projects. These are water resources projects.
This is the agency-wide 10-year CIP. And so we're just wanted to show you the encompass, the entire 10-year projected CIP and how it relates to what we had previously forecasted for rates. So obviously these are high costs and they would impact our rates if we were to increase or decrease those. And thought it was important for engineering to see the whole picture.
And what were you saying about the $20 million for Sites Reservoir?
The Sites Reservoir, we have it listed at $20 million, but I don't believe that we are actually paying $2 million a year. I believe that's anticipated to increase over time, and our current obligation is less than that, I'm sure, for sure.
Well, there's three different methods for payment of Sites Reservoir. One is you defer and just pay an ongoing cost, somewhere around $800,000 for the first 10 years until construction is done. And then you start paying the construction costs back. So we either do that through a Sites loan. So we pay Sites, we get our own loan to pay for the construction costs. Or the most cost effective to the customer is to do pay as you go, which means we're paying for the construction costs for the next 10 years as they're building the reservoir. That eliminates, of course, any financing costs in the next, 10 to 30 years for construction. There's an idea where some of the contractors, the state water contractors, have are proposing to add that cost to their state water contract, our ad valorem taxes, to collect through property taxes rather than through rates. That's why it's an if. So, it's right now with the $747 million that we've been given, it needs to be taken out. We can't do PAYGO and have the most cost effective with that in there. So for this particular scenario, we have to push it out and pay those construction costs after the first 10 years.
When will we have a decision on whether we can put it onto the ad valorem?
So that's a conversation between our legal counsel and our bond counsel. They're because both of them are working for the state water contractor. So we'll get a pretty good idea. It just depends on what we think the challenges might be. We want to make sure we are conservative in our approach.
President Martin, I'm sure you've got something on the chat.
Courtney, you mentioned a number of times that the information that will be forthcoming from the master plan is going to help you on decisions with regard to water storage and residue tanks. Is that to say that the master plan is not yet available for you to use, or is it?
We have parts of it. We have the hydraulic model is available, and we are using it, the updated and calibrated hydraulic model internally. We're still developing the CIP. We've taken a draft of one component and we're continuing to work through that. Anticipated draft full CIP is for late January, early February of next year. The final master plan document is estimated to complete by late May, early June of next year, which is when we will anticipate publishing it to our website. We will have access to the metrics and the asset management component where we did the risk analysis already sometime after February, so early March, maybe after that point, in which case we'll have some of that data. We also have, as part of that, done some well siting 4, 5, and 6 and some other items that they were required to do, some interconnectivity studies to see where we can do pipeline projects that would help us circulate our system a little better. And then obviously pipeline replacement identification. A lot of different components to help us with that. And including in that, that we don't have the results for yet, is the emergency storage. So once we have that emergency storage to re-identify what it is, then we can evaluate what that means to us and whether or not the local water supplies or the deeper aquifers could be considered part of our emergency storage. And how would that reduce our obligation and whether or not we can pass that water throughout the valley, or do we need additional projects, including pipelines, to pass from east to west to truly view that as our emergency storage?
So there's a lot of considerations that go into that report and analysis, and we are looking forward to it, but we don't have that yet.
Thank you. Second question is, I assume we will be revisiting this 10-year plan
every year.
Every
or so 6 months.
So this is not the last chance that you have to propose any changes that might be.
It is not. And we built ourselves some flexibility, especially in the pipeline program for reprioritization. That's why you see it as a pool of money. We have a list that goes well beyond what that pool of money is for pipelines that to be replaced and can easily reprioritize the pipelines to be replaced based off of any new available information, whether that's our own asset management or if we start seeing additional breaks in that area, we determine it's going to ramp up in priority. We've built in the flexibility to adjust, which again is why you keep those in big pools until we've identified the project and begin the planning.
Okay. Excellent report. Thank you.
And this is also the list that's going in the application for MOPIA.
Director Peterson.
It's always kind of a blast.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry.
Thanks, Courtney. I appreciate it. I understand why you did it that way. But the pipeline replacement program was interesting to me, you're just projecting a $10 million per year expense for that, or capital replacement, if you want to call it that.
Correct.
That's correct. And whatever those projects are, you're going to prioritize them. So that works into that formula up there. But the big cost is really more into the wells and the treatment projects.
Right.
So we do want our well supply continuing. So, but also a couple of caveats too, because we have an action item or a discussion on the next item is our new Saugus wells. Some of that expense is being taken care of by the Whitaker group. Is there any idea how much that might be out of that?
We aren't sure. Obviously, that has a settlement component to it that'll come out, and that wasn't contemplated. So that flexibility is also built into the plan that, obviously, if we get additional grant funding, if we haven't secured the grant, even if we have heard about it or applied for it, if we haven't actually secured the grant, then we didn't list it. We did list the ones that we already have and we know are coming in, for example, for the Saugus wells or something along those lines. But other facilities that we had on there, we didn't include that in. So there will be an offset there. We always actively seek out grants and other some even low interest or zero interest loans or grants from the state, like related to LARC. Those were included because we know those are coming in as well. But the settlement agreements from Whitaker or from future 3M, if we have them, were not contemplated and would ultimately lower that total amount. Or more likely, we would come back to the board during that budget year and ask for additional projects to be added in. It seems like Matt may also have a comment on that.
Yeah, just minor clarification. The pending Whitaker is a judgment that's under appeal as opposed to a settlement agreement.
Okay.
But similar concept, basically. We're waiting for the outcome of the appeal process to know whether we actually get that money or some different amount, or we need to go back through another round in the courts.
I thought first August 3 and 4, we already, we already have that. It's up to 85% on.
I'm sorry. Yeah. 3 and 4 was an amendment to the original settlement agreement. And there was $8.5 million or something like that was capped, which we have applied and billed out for that job as it's underway.
So we have that is our a funding source, which is on the revenue side. So we'll offset a little bit of the capital.
But it wasn't included in that. In that
total cost is included here, but the amount that's taken out for the reimbursement.
And it's included in the rate forecast that was.
Yeah, that is because it's a known settlement agreement. It's the pending judgment that's not included at this point in time because we don't have a final judgment.
Well, in that case, you showed us, treatment costs for PFAS. I was wondering if you can have that segment readily available for our 21st board meeting, Courtney, just to show to the board.
The PFAS.
Yeah, we're working on that briefing for the closed session that's scheduled for that night, and we will include information on cost projections.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, the numbers are staggering. The amount of work that needs to be done is staggering. And in normal circumstances, it's huge. But PFAS has thrown a wrench into this thing where it's come in and taken a high priority and pushed everything else back. You've got $100-something million worth of PFAS that's pushing recycled back, pushing other projects back because PFAS obviously is a higher priority. That's going to have an effect on us for a long time, is what I see in it. And just our normal pipeline replacements and things, if it were not for PFAS, we would be doing much more of that kind of work. But we need to get that word out, I think, to the public, because they need to understand what these kinds of costs are in dealing with things like PFAS. We'll put Captain PFAS on. Any other questions, Peter?
Yeah, just to follow up with Devil's Den, that pricing is not based on recent conversations that we've been having with the solar panel vendors, right?
It is not.
Okay. All right.
Any other questions? Mm-hmm. Rochelle will find the money somewhere.
So long as you approve it, I'll find
Okay, thank you. We'll move on to item 5. This is groundwater containment treatment restoration project. This is the mitigated negative deck. Courtney.
Yeah, it's actually going to be done by the project manager for this project, Robert Willis.
Good evening, committee members. Next slide, please. What you have here on your screen is an aerial of the project sites, and it also shows other project sites that we're currently working on. We'll go ahead and start on the left-hand side. We have a few pin drops here. The first one is the purple pin drop. It's the chemical building, which we will be performing final design services if we get approval. The next pin would be shown in orange. That is the existing job site for the Saugus wells number 3 and number 4. We're currently well drilling there. We just recently completed the well casing installation for Saugus well number 3, and we're currently performing the pilot hole drilling for number 4. The next pin drop to the right is in yellow. This would be a pipeline that we would end up installing. It's a part of the final design services that we're trying to get approval for. It would essentially connect Saugus wells number 3 and number 4 to well 206 and 207, which are located to the far right. And the purpose of this pipeline is to combine the well water from all 4 wells and send it to the centralized treatment shown in purple all the way to the far left. And again, just to recap, we have well 206 shown in blue all the way to the far right. And to the northeast, we have well 207. And we are trying to get planning services performed for those 2 well sites. Next slide, please. We have a couple of pictures here. On the left-hand side, we have a picture of well 206. The average flow rate for this well is approximately 2,300 to 2,500 gallons per minute. And well 207 on the right-hand side also has the same average flow rate. Next slide, please. Here we have a quick summary of how the process unfolded. On May 30th, 2023, we did put up the RFP on Planet Bids. On July 5th, we did receive two proposals, one from Woodard and Karen and one from Lee and Rowe. The evaluation team consisted of engineering, operations, and maintenance. And we did end up selecting Lee and Rowe based on the criteria shown there. Next slide, please. Here's a quick overview of what will be performed if we do award this to Lee and Rowe. They would essentially be responsible to be in these project meetings and workshops. They would perform data collection and review, topo surveys, ground treatment improvement planning, identification of easements, jurisdictional boundaries, make sure we satisfy all permit requirements. They're going to provide planning level design drawings and 3D renderings. They're going to provide construction costs and also final design on pipeline and the chemical building. This job would fall under the agency strategic plan objective D1, achieve 100% compliance with all environmental regulations and standards, and D2, proactively install, operate, and maintain groundwater treatment infrastructure to avoid impacts on water supply reliability. For example, VOCs, perchlorate, PFAS, etc. Next slide, please. I wanted to provide a picture of what the chemical building could potentially look like. Next slide, please. And here I wanted to provide a table where it showcases the services that will be provided on the left-hand side. And on the right-hand side, we'll have a cost breakdown. I'll go ahead and start with the first service, which would be planning for groundwater treatment improvements that came in at approximately 160K. The final design for the transmission line, pump to waistline, turnout, blending station, and site drainage, that's approximately 190K. And the final design for chemical building injection and turnout came out to be about 250K. When you add all these three components, this comes up to an amount of $600,000. Again, I just want to recap that the pipeline will combine well water from all four wells, 206, 207, Saugus 3, number 4, and send to a centralized chemical building for treatment. Next slide, please. A few important dates here. On November 2nd, which is today, we're coming to the Engineering and Operations Committee. We'll be going to the board on November 21st. And if everything gets approved, we will be providing a notice to proceed sometime in November for the planning and design services to be performed. And we are estimating that it's going to take approximately 6 months to wrap up the planning and final design services. Next slide, please. In essence, we would like that the Engineering Operations Committee recommends that the Board of Directors approve, pursuant to the previously adopted addendum, to the adopted 2005 Groundwater Containment, Treatment, and Restoration Project, MND, and MMRP, a purchase order to Lee and Rowe Incorporated for an amount not to exceed of $600,000 for planning and final design services for the Wells 206 and 207 Groundwater Treatment Improvements Project. That concludes my presentation.
Very good. Thank you, Rob.
You're welcome.
Any questions?
Seeing none.
Committee. President Martin.
Robert, thank you for your presentation. How many folks do we have on our on-call list that would be qualified to do this?
I don't have that number on hand. Court, would you happen to know how many we have on our on-call list?
Rough estimate that could do the chemical treatment as well as the pipeline design. A lot more that could do the pipeline design, but when you combine them for economies of scale, it reduces the number of consultants. I would say probably 5 or 6 of the 22 we have that could do this
work. And we requested 4, so that's pretty good. We got 2, fortunately, 2 good firms. So, and we've worked with Lee and Roe before, and we've had good success. I understand that.
Yes, we have.
Yes.
Okay. Well, thanks.
Design for some of this should be easier because it's becoming, you know, it just has to match the site that you're going to, but the needs are becoming pretty standard for some of the things we're doing.
Yeah, we're definitely trying to standardize. We're working on creating design guidelines for tanks, pump stations, and chemical systems or treatment at sites. So we will hopefully have those standards established and be able to put those on our web page to even increase that design further and make it even more standardized, easier to follow, so that we're getting the same facilities on each location, easier for maintenance in the future.
Yeah.
Yeah, and all the buildings are the same, same block, same roof, same,
you know. Which is why he showed you the Valley Center, because it's a very good project, obviously very concise, and that is what we're targeting as an example for a good project to move forward.
Right. Any other questions? Nothing? We'll move this on to the board with our recommendation then.
Yes.
Can we move for consent?
I think it's
yeah.
Okay.
That worked Thank out you. Very well at the board meeting before last.
That was very nice. Thank you, Robert.
Thank you, Robert.
Don't expect that.
You're welcome.
Hey, item 6. This is Bureau of Rec Water Smart Drought Response Program. Wells in 11, 12, and 13.
Yes, our project manager for the N Wells is Mark Alentado, and he's going to go ahead and present this item to you today.
Yep. Hey, can you guys hear me?
Yep.
Hey, Mark. Good evening, everybody. So my name is Mark Alentado. I'm the project manager for the Newhall Wells at 11 and 12 and 13 groundwater treatment improvements project. We have an item here in front of you this evening to recommend adoption of a resolution authorizing the general manager to apply for grant funding under the Bureau of Reclamation Water Smart Drought Response Program and accept and execute a grant agreement for the Newhall Wells groundwater treatment improvements. Next slide, please. Before getting into the details of the grant, please let me provide a brief description of the Newhall Wells Groundwater Treatment Improvement Project. So SCV Water operates 3 wells, N11, N12, and N13. These wells pump water from the Saugus Aquifer. And these wells are centrally located on Railroad Avenue between Oak Ridge Drive and Placerita Creek Bridge. The combined groundwater production of these wells is about 5,400 gallons per minute. And N11 was taken offline in 1997 for perchlorate. However, recent water quality samples of this well indicate detections of PFAS chemicals as well. N12 and 13 are both active. However, recent water quality data also indicate that these wells exceed both the proposed notification limit of 3 nanograms per liter and response limit of 20 nanograms per liter for PFH excess. So over the last few months, staff have been working on a feasibility study and preliminary designs for centralized treatment for these 3 wells. The proposed treatment facility is located in an undeveloped lot just south of N12 and the Newhall disinfection facility, which is shown in dark blue here. Thanks to members of SCV Water staff, this property was recently purchased and is now owned by the agency. Next slide, please. So this image shows a render of what the proposed treatment improvements may look like south of the existing N12 well and Newhall disinfection facility. The treatment process is described following the arrows. So starting at the white arrows on the right side of your screen, raw water travels from these wells and will enter the facility near the existing chemical injection point. Water would then travel to the new cartridge filter shown in purple and then to the ion exchange vessels shown in light blue. These ion exchange vessels are filled with resins that filter out the PFAS contaminants. As an added benefit, these proposed ion exchange treatment vessels will also filter out perchlorate contaminants to a non-detect level. Filtered water would then travel back to the existing chemical injection point, where liquid ammonium sulfate from the new LAS building and chlorine from the existing disinfection building will be combined to disinfect the water prior to delivery into the distribution system. Next slide, please. So moving on to the grant. So the U.S. Department of Interior's Bureau of Reclamation released a grant funding opportunity as part of the Water Smart Drought Response Program. This program provides financial assistance for projects that increase water supply reliability and improve water delivery during periods of drought. So PFAS chemicals are eligible under drought resiliency projects, the Category A classification. The grant opportunity is competitive, and BOR expects that 15 to 21 projects to be awarded funding for this round. The application requires an official resolution adopted by the Board of Directors no more than 30 days after the application deadline, which is in November 7. I just got word that we actually submitted the application earlier today. So next slide, please. The grant funding itself offers three funding options shown here. So we applied for the group three funding option, which provides up to $5 million of project that can be completed within 3 years. The grant will require about 50% matching contribution from SCV Water and up to the balance of funds that are needed to complete the construction of the project. So right now, the estimated project cost is $18 million. With approximately $1.5 million going to engineering and design costs and approximately $16.5 million going to construction and construction support related costs. So these costs do not include the funds associated with the recent land acquisition earlier discussed. And if awarded, the grant funding would offset $5 million in project costs to SCV Water. So we've allocated funds in the FY23-24 and FY24-25 to finalize engineering and design. And then money will also be allocated in FY25-26 and 26-27 CIP budgets for construction and construction support related costs. Next slide, please. So thanks to members of SCV Water staff for facilitating the grant application. The board of directors resolution must be adopted before December 7th. We intend to present this item on the board of directors on November 21st board meeting. And if our application is successful, we expect notice of the grant award by November of next year. Environmental review is currently in progress and is anticipated to be completed in January 2024. Final design is projected to be completed in March of 2025 and construction completion in September 2026, well before the grant project completion deadline of November 7, 2027. Next slide, please. To conclude my presentation, staff is recommending that the Engineering and Operations Committee recommend to the Board of Directors to adopt a resolution authorizing the General Manager to apply for funding under the Bureau of Reclamation Water Smart Drought Response Program and accept and execute a grant agreement for the Newhall Wells groundwater treatment improvements. If appropriate, I'd like this item to be considered on the consent calendar for the November 21st board meeting. And this concludes my presentation. With that, I'll bring it back to you, Chair Cooper.
Thank you, Mark. Mm-hmm. Any questions out there, Liz?
Seeing none.
Very good. Questions from the committee?
Nice to get an update on that project.
Yes. Yeah. I'm glad we have the land now and we can move forward with it.
Thank you, Mark, for the presentation.
Very good. Thank you. And consent this place. That should be no problem.
Great. Thank you, guys.
The monthly operations production reports.
Thank you. Just a few things to update. As I've been reporting the last few months, our mix is still heavy on the import side, given the wet year we had behind us. We were 81% for the month, and this is the month of September. And our mix is about 75% year to date. We did get a little bit of rainfall, about 0.3 inches in September, and that ended the water year with 40.4 inches. So a good year. As you know, we had Hurricane Hillary drop a lot of water on us at the end of, I think it was right near the end of August, but that was, you know, it was too late to get the data to see how the impact was at our last board meeting. So I did review through the water level data for the various wells, and 34 of the 45 wells that we tracked saw increases directly attributed to that event, with 9 of our wells being at or near all-time highs. And this would be as of the end of September, so not normal. And that's my report.
Very good. There's still water in the river.
Yep,
up on the north end of of the Canyon Country area. Yeah. Question from Mr. Abercrombie. Thank you, please. Construction status report.
Item number 8 in your packet is the capital improvement project construction status. Highlight, we have been adding a few projects on there. The pump station, well 201, moving along, as well as the Dean Tank at Skyline, which is a cost share project with the development, is Pacific Hydrotech. I highlight that one because they did the concrete walls, and when they started to form the roof, you had some sagging in the formation of the roof, and they poured some concrete out, and they had to redo it all. We will not be hit with that change order. That is going to be on the contractors, and they are continuing to move forward with that now, hopefully going to be pouring that roof again in the near future.
Is it a form problem?
It was a form problem. They didn't have it stabilized enough. It's quite a bit of concrete. In order to keep the tank lower, you do a domed concrete roof that is thick and that resists the sloshing factor of an earthquake, and you keep the profile of the tank a little lower than you would if you were a steel or a flat-roofed concrete tank.
That's the only item.
I just wanted to highlight that item because it was an interesting tidbit for that. And we will show some videos, including drone footage of the various pours for that site as soon as that tank is starts and does their pre-stress wrapping. Then we'll show you how the concrete tank is built over time.
The roof was, they had actually added the roof already.
They poured the middle part, and then they had the slumping with some of the concrete coming into the forms, and they had to remove what was poured and start again.
What is the diameter of the tank?
It is a,
I'm trying to remember,
76 foot diameter.
No wonder.
Yeah, 76 foot. I'm not positive on that. I can check the number if you would like to know, but it's approximately 76.
Well, it wasn't the guy that walked in and said, boy, this is not looking good.
No, no, that wouldn't be very safe.
Chairman, please got to ask for public comment on item 7 and this group, item 8.
Anybody out there?
Public comment for 7 or 8? Seeing none.
Okay, item 9, third-party agreements.
Quite a bit of development still going on. We are still seeing new planning projects coming in, as well as the standard commercial and residential projects moving forward. So that is included. The summary of those is included in your report as item number 9. And there are multiple pages. We are issuing a lot of notices of completion and closing out our projects and making that a priority. right now, and we will continue to make that a priority at the conclusion of the project to make sure we keep up with it. So a lot of this list will slowly go away as the notice of completions are finalized.
Very good.
Seeing none.
Sending this on the team.
I'm sorry.
You're sending this on the team?
Oh. Yeah, he would enjoy that. Committee planning calendar? Anything in the code?
No, we are still being successful in keeping the number of items at each committee meeting between three or four items. We're trying to keep that for a time perspective, because obviously if we are going to be able to provide you with as much detail as you deserve, we need to make sure we have the time to do so. So we've been trying to manage that as much as possible. Obviously, we will exceed that periodically, but we've been working hard to spread out our projects and present them in that manner.
Very good. Any questions?
Seeing none.
Director Peterson.
I noticed we're going to be talking about a pipeline replacement on Newhall Avenue between Market and to Pine Street.
The piece we're looking at now is doesn't cross the railroad,
but there's
got this.
This is all part of the last breakdown.
No, this is really replacing a kind of old pipeline as part of the new lead and copper rule.
Oh,
galvanized pipe.
Oh, that's still there.
So that was a collaboration between engineering and operations where we did a study to determine if we abandoned the portion that was under the railroad and didn't replace it at this time, how would we impact fire flows to the area? Mm-hmm. We had one fire hydrant that was impacted, and that was resolved by reconnecting it to the 24-inch that eventually will go underneath the railroad and make that connection. And that's a future project to make the connection between the 24-inch on the east and west side of that railroad track, currently in CIP with Orlando Marino as the project manager. So we will be working with the railroad to do a jack and board project as we move that forward. But for now, we're able to still meet all fire flows for the zone without that connecting pipe.
I only bring that up because I remember working on that back 20 years ago.
That's... They're looking at a huge development on the corner of Newhall and Sierra Highway, across from the Shell station or the Chevron station on the other side, and then behind Carl's Jr. They're looking at well over 1,000 units.
Yep.
Yeah, that's going to take quite a flow to get over there.
Yes, we will be happy to do a sub-area master plan to evaluate their project needs.
Good. City's not happy with that one either. Okay, item number 11, treatment, distribution, operations, and maintenance section.
Thank you. Just a few things. An update on personnel. We have went out... posted for two new positions that were previously approved by the committee and the board, a utility operations supervisor and a water system supervisor. Those postings have closed, and we are in the process of setting up interviews, and so they will be taking place over the next month or month and a half. In the similar position, but not those two. a current utility operations supervisor is retiring in July of next year, and has a longtime employee. He's been here, Roger
Kitchen.
And so there's we've set up meetings between with Roger and engineering to sort of like a field visit, field drive, try to do a download of history. So that's in process and will be going on. In our laboratory, we've hired a temporary lab tech. This is to cover temporarily the one of our scientists who's on maternity. And our safety department, we have just posted for a safety department intern. And so we'll be bringing in an intern like we have in some of the other departments. And this will assist the three staff in safety for the time being. You all have heard about the or have been aware of the wind over the past week and a half or so. The red flag conditions, PSPS or public safety power shutoff notices. We get, this is when our email explodes, and we get about 300 emails from Edison over a few hour period of time. But I wanted to give you a little bit of an update as to what STEP does and what has been happening during that type of an event. Because of the red flag conditions and the higher fire risk, we change our operating levels on all our tanks to what we call summer levels, which means we keep the tanks higher than they might not cycle quite as deep as they would in the winter normally, so that we have more water in the tanks at any given time. We've staged several generators at facilities that if we do have a PSPS or a significant outage, we know there's key facilities that need to be running sooner than others. And so we proactively stage generators at a number of facilities to be ready to do that if we need to. Staff is in constant contact with our Edison reps as they man their Edison's Emergency Operations Center. So we get, routine updates as to what's coming our way. During these past events, we didn't have any major outages. We had, I think, one or two minor sort of unplanned outages here and there, but we only had a couple of PSPS events that were called, one in Tesoro area and one in the Needham Ranch project area. And those were short, only a few hours, so they didn't really necessitate us doing anything drastic with generators or anything like that. An update on the AMI project, phase three, which the board just approved not too long ago, covers about 5,000 meters in the Castaic area. The contractor is starting on, I believe, Monday, November 6th, on that project. Staff is already working on phase four as far as putting together an RFP. So we're trying to stay on that.
How many phases do we think we'll have if this is phase four?
I think maybe we figured six, if I recall correctly, of different sizes. I mean, we can support that. The Olympian tanks one and four, RICO project was approved. Those tanks have been drained, and the contractor starts on those next week, November 8th. And it's, they'll probably be done maybe 6 months or so April or so of next year. The Newhall Avenue Pipeline project that you asked about, Director Peterson, I was just going to point out that staff's currently working with Metrolink. Probably the toughest thing we've ever done. So when you get ready to bore under it, good luck, Court. All we're doing is putting a traffic control sign in their right-of-way, nowhere near the tracks, but within their right-of-way. And we have like a 100-page agreement and document and whatnot. So we're working through that, and eventually we'll get there.
We've already met with JJ to download the knowledge he has and the experience he had going through that, and to mimic the application as soon as it's successful to save us time.
Maybe you'll only have to submit it one or two times instead of 10 or 12.
Yeah.
We're finalizing an RFP for the filter media replacement project. And recall, a year or so ago, we replaced the filter media in a couple of bed filters. And this project will be a much larger one to replace a much larger group. So staff is working on that RFP right now. An update on the Saugus Well 2 rehab project. We had a pre-construction meeting today, actually, with the contractor, and they're looking to start towards the end of the month. And lastly, we've talked about it a few previous meetings working with the Division of Drinking Water for a consolidated permit. You may recall we have 7 operating permits currently with DDW, and so this would result in 1 new permit number and 1 permit. That is in progress. It's actually going pretty well, I think. Staff is routinely talking with and sending stuff to DDW. We have a quarterly meeting with DDW coming up this month, and we'll provide more information to them at that time. Staff is revising currently all of our sampling schedules and programs. These would include things like total coliform rule, disinfection byproducts, nitrification, to come up with 1 big plan now instead of a bunch of little ones. And we anticipate this probably came from Mike, this date, and you know how he is sometimes, but I'll still think this is acceptable. That we might get the consolidated permit by mid next year.
And that seems like a very simple process for them. It's the same, same aquifer, it's the same straws. It's
the last, or one of the glitches early on, which I think they've worked through, I'm not sure, is one of the databases that houses a bunch of the information that they use is an EPA database. And they can't do anything to it, only the EPA. And the EPA didn't exactly know how to do the things we wanted to do to it. So therein lied, you know, 1 obstacle. But I think they're working through that. So that's my report.
Very good. Anything, Liz?
Seeing none.
Very good. Questions from the committee?
Everybody? Thank you, Chair Cooper. Keith, I wasn't being rude looking at my phone. I was trying to find the email we got recognized performance by somebody in the field at a residence up on Hillcrest.
Right? Oh, yeah. That was very nice.
And it was really nice to read that.
Make sure that.
And I'm hoping that this person at least got some word of gratitude from the senior staff.
They did. No, we want to make sure they get it from you.
Okay.
And there's not many people out there that take time to do that. So they must have been very pleased. And that's
very, very, very nice to hear.
I did have a complaint. It was online on Facebook. Somebody that I knew that said, they showed a picture of their water in a bowl, white bowl. And it was yellow color, very noticeably. And they said, oh, my gosh, what is this? We can't drink that. And, of course, people signed, hey, oh, that's that water coming in. I'll do it. So I put one in there. I said, by the way, do you have a water softener company that comes in and changes your water softeners? And they said, oh, yeah, we do. I said, well, that's where it is. It didn't go away. It's from their resin. So. But I didn't see anybody that said, oh, wow. Thanks.
Yeah. No, that doesn't happen.
Okay. Item 12, report on engineering services section.
We have a little show and tell coming up. First, I wanted to cover 2 quick things. 1, the Dickinson pipeline. We've had a few hurdles out in the field where, amazingly enough, when we dug into the ground, not everything was as it showed on the plans or on the as-built. Including a 24-inch storm drain actually being 48-inch, little details like that, as you cross and not being at a 45-degree angle, but at a 30-degree angle is making us redesign a section of pipe. But that is being handled as we speak, and we are actually a little ahead of schedule. They originally planned to have that complete in late January, and now they're assuming that they will be able to have the pipeline complete by this December if they stay on task and don't run into too many more of these. So we're hoping they do stay on task and get that pipeline complete, and we're able to get out of that street. And then I just wanted to make a plug for the Water Academy. We had our first class of the Water Academy was last night, I do believe, and we have the next one is November 9th, and that will be the engineering and operations and lab
and water quality all presenting. For engineering, we're going to have Jason Yim do the presentation instead of me this time, so he gets to have that experience as well. I did find it really rewarding when I was able to do that last time, just seeing the public engagement and really feel like the public that comes to those are invested in understanding their water. So great experience from us. And if you haven't been able to see Jeff's presentation on the lab, it's worthwhile coming and see, because he's pretty funny when he presents all that material and explains what a part per trillion is. I love those demonstrations. Those are really good. So I know some of the board members get signed up for those, and hopefully you are able to come and see some of those presentations. And that will be next week. And then with that, I will turn it over to Orlando Moreno to give a update on our Blue Beam process and plan review.
Yeah, thanks, Court. Is that also Mike Albert's presentation next week?
Yeah, Mike won't be doing it, but it's the same thing. He's, it's his anniversary. We got him. We cut him some slack.
I didn't want to, but I would like to see Jeff. So I understand he's a completely different person when he gives a presentation. You know, he's always been very quiet. So I'd like to go to them.
It was well done.
We'll see you in person, by the way.
Yeah, I wanted to be here in person to present this, this presentation to you guys. Good evening, Chuck Cooper and committee members. My name is Orlando Moreno, senior engineer with the agency. So tonight I'd like to share with you our ongoing efforts aimed at enhancing our department's plan review and project coordination process. By using the latest in information technology, our group is working to improve our responsiveness and level of service to our public, our agency colleagues, and the customers that we serve. Next slide, please, Liz. So our engineering department receives a high volume of engineering plans and technical reports from various parties that require our staff to provide detailed plan review, provide corrections, and ongoing project coordination. Some of these plans we receive from private engineers and private developers on a lot of the water systems that are being proposed as part of these large developments. We also receive design plans, specifications, and reports for various new capital improvement projects that are being managed by our internal staff. And then on occasion, we'll get plans from our most of our operation folks on repair jobs or maintenance projects through our department that we also review. And so some of these plans can range from just 1 to 2 sheets of drawings to more complex projects that require hundreds of sheets or more than 100 sheets. In fact, I'm looking at one of the PFAS projects that's 120 sheets right now. So makes it fun. Next slide, please. So we use various innovative technologies to help us streamline the plan review process, the plan review and coordination process for various projects that we plan check. Bluebeam is an application that we use to digitally review and provide comments on plans that are submitted electronically. And I'll discuss Bluebeam later in the slide and get into the details on that application shortly. We utilize project management and Microsoft Suite applications to record plan submittals as they come in and track plan review status. We typically check in and log in a plan as they are received, assign deadlines, track our plan check duration progress. This ensures that our plans are completed in the order that they're received and that the review is completed in a timely manner. We also use Microsoft Teams. Probably most of you are aware of that software, as an ultra convenient communication and collaboration tool that gives us the ability to coordinate with staff and the public very easily. It's really an effective tool that allows us to share drawings and documents with all participants in real time in a virtual setting. And we're also looking at ways to leverage new technologies through the use of platforms like Power BI, Tableau, Google Data Studio that can be effective tools in providing a dashboard of performance metrics and data analytics. So, for example, this technology would allow us to track the quantity of plans we have in our queue at any given time,
or tell us how long it has taken us to complete a specific plan meeting. So when we have a developer or an engineer come to us and say, hey, how long is it going to take for you guys to review a set of tank plans? We can look at our digital dashboard or analytical dashboard and give them a sense of how much it's going to take based on the amount of plans we have in the queue at that given time. So just a few examples of the technology that we're looking at, we're utilizing to enable our department to increase productivity and overall efficiency. Next slide. So on this slide, I'll talk a little bit about Bluebeam, technically called Bluebeam Review. It's highlight some of its features and benefits. Bluebeam Review is a PDF reading and editing application that allows the user to easily mark up, organize, and track comments on large sets of technical PDF files and drawings. You can think of Bluebeam as a cross between an Acrobat editor and a computer drafting tool, although this is much, much easier to use. The software provides the ability for multiple project team members to simultaneously access drawings, provide comments, and collaborate in real time from any location so long as you have an internet connection. And so digital plans are typically uploaded in Bluebeam's cloud repository called the Bluebeam Studio. And then an email invite is with an authorization link is sent to all the project team members. So those with access to the project files are able to provide comments, responses, and markups on these documents, which are instantly seen by all team members wherever they may be.
So no hard copies are exchanged?
No hard copies. we'll get to that one shortly. But that's a good comment.
Like a powerful computer.
That's it exactly. So the interface is very easy to use and provides many annotation tools and document management features. As comments and markups are annotated, you can see those in this green, yellowish. So you're marking up the drawing there. The software will automatically tabulate the comments down below where you see the table there. And so this feature provides an increased level of data organization and accountability by tracking each and every entry for all to see. So if I go in here and I enter fix this line, and there's five people on this file, they can instantly see my comments. So it's a really, really powerful tool. So once the plan is reviewed and comments have been completed by agency staff, an access link is sent to the engineer that prepared the plans. They would then be provided. They would then provide written responses to those comments and upload the revised set of plans or email the revised set of plans to our engineering department. Those responses can be either directly provided on this data table or written on the plan itself. And which allows the agency to verify that all plan check comments have been addressed before recommending plan approval. Next slide, please.
Are as-builts done on the same format?
They can be. They're checked in that platform, but we use another software called Proport. It's more of a construction management tool, and that's where we approve and collect all the as-built documentation. That's more of a construction.
And that was presented at the last E&O Procore. We use that for our record drawing. We'll try to use that term as opposed to as-built.
Record drawing.
As-built. Yes.
So the plans here are in PDF format.
Yes.
So we can't.
It's a PDF document.
Yeah.
Okay, so traditionally, multiple large hard copy plans, Director Martin.
I'm looking at this is
your slide right here. you would be driven or couriered to our engineering counter for submittal. Then a hard copy set would be reviewed and physically transferred from department to department for review and commenting. A single final redline set of big plans would then be available for pickup by the plan preparer for all comment with all the comments. After it was completed. And then, of course, any coordination meetings would be held at a physical office, right? And you'd be looking at a bunch of set of plans. So you would guess, and as some of you have experienced, the plan checking and collaboration process was very slow, inconvenient, and costly. Next slide, please. So today we use, with the use of technologies like Bluebeam Review, Microsoft Teams, the plan review process and team collaboration has obviously been substantially improved. Digital plans are received electronically and simultaneously distributed to multiple agency departments for review. Each department is able to review plans on the Bluebeam cloud in real time and provide comments that can be seen by all other departments as they are being entered. Once all comments have been completed by the plan reviewers, a virtual project review and coordination meeting is held to discuss the comments, discuss any discrepancies, and basically get a consensus on the plan comments. Then those are transmitted to the plan preparer to address the comments and prepare a revised plan set of resubmittal documents. So this process results in a much more streamlined workflow, reducing overall plan review time, allows all departments to access the plans and see all the review plan check comments from any location, reduces the cost of printing, driving, and delivery services, and then provides a much more convenient method of coordination and communication between all project team members and the public. Next slide. So the agency implemented Bluebeam probably sometime in 2020. As you may expect, there was some hesitation from a few on its use, especially for those that were used to seeing large sets of plans. So early on, we worked on customizing the interface and creating customized tools to make it easier for folks to adapt and get accustomed to the software. With the help of the IT department, we produced a training video that introduced the software and provided an overview of how the system would work and be used in our agency. And then we'll continue to provide training for our engineering folks and our agency folks to make sure that everyone is implemented to the best of their ability. We plan to offer Bluebeam lunch and learns and Q&A sessions here shortly, just to improve our skills and update our workflow procedures. So we expect those to come here in the next few months. And we're working on putting that together. And then looking forward, staff will continue to receive input from all Bluebeam project users, find out what works, what doesn't, and help us refine our overall plan review process. Our team will continue to explore new technologies, determine ways to interpret and use the vast amount of data that we're collecting on a day-to-day basis, and really to just work on improving our department's level of responsiveness and customer service. With that, I thank you for listening to my presentation, and I will open it up for questions or comments.
Thank you.
That's really good.
Same.
Any issues with resolution on the received PDFs from?
No, we don't. You would have an issue with resolutions if you're looking at old as-built drawings that are scanned, right? Yeah. So, you know, back in the day, you'd have Mylars or even before that, and they were scanned. And so then at that point, they were scanned at a very low resolution. So you may have those issues, but we seldom see documents come in like that. You know, most of the documents that we're seeing are being produced by a drafting computer system like AutoCAD or and so those, when they print them out as a PDF, you can zoom in, it's very crisp. So there's high resolution.
High resolution PDFs are able to be loaded because you're not sending them around, you're uploading them to the cloud. So you're not having the same resolutions as if you were trying to do a scan and implement, scan and then add it there. You can get them electronically uploaded directly from the source.
And what about record keeping? All the notes that our agency scout does, those drawings, which it's submitted to whoever submitted them. Do we keep our notes?
We do.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean it's recorded on that PDF document. So what Bluebeam does, it's data. It's recorded on the PDF itself. It's in the cloud somewhere in Las Vegas, right? wherever they store this data. And once you're ready to close out a project, let's say it's been approved, then we can download that all those files and then put them in our directory or wherever we want to file them in the agency. So through the process, it's in the cloud, so everyone has access to it. You can, as long as you have an internet connection, you can access.
Show the notes, all the comments, everything. Right?
Yeah.
Nice thing he's going to say is we don't have script files anymore. Mm-hmm.
I mean, we have coordination meetings where we'll pull up Bluebeam and you have a tracker. So if I tell you where I'm pointing, you can see it if you're looking at it at the same time. So it's a pretty powerful tool.
We've also updated our conference rooms to allow for multiple screens to pull up Bluebeam. We also have a whiteboard because we still use the whiteboard, but the whiteboards have a movement tracker so they can eliminate the person being shown and instead just show the mark as it shows up on the whiteboard, and that will show up on the screen from Teams as a remote. So even if you are having to do an on-the-fly design with working with multiple people, you can still use the whiteboard to speak. I know I speak with pen in hand most of my time when I'm trying to draw. It's a lot easier to draw something up than it is to do that. And then you can take that clip and put it into Bluebeam if you wanted to, as an example of what you wanted it to look like as from a design standard, especially useful when you're doing an undercrossing under a storm drain or have to have some specialty design where we know what DDW requirements are going to be and we want to sketch it out for everyone to understand.
Okay. I take it as a subscription service associated with Bluebeam, right? And having them...
There's an annual subscription to it. You pay per seat, right? I think there's a license. I'm not quite sure how much that is.
And when we archive the data into our own archives, those videos, those comments, those are saved on non-proprietary...
they're just PDFs.
Okay. That's great. Oh, great.
You can open it up with an Acrobat if you like, and you see it. You wouldn't be able to... It's not data rich. You'd be able to see the data. It wouldn't have the features that Bluebeam has, where you can query comments if you wanted to. We have it set up so that each department has a layer. So if you just wanted to see the operation comments, you can click on it and just see operation comments only. You want to see engineering. So we have it to that.
So is Bluebeam used by other agencies or
they are. I actually, my previous work experience, LAUSD used it quite often. They were probably one of the largest agency that had implemented, and they basically required everyone to use it, including their consultants and the public. So in any plans that you submitted through LAUSD as part of their large bond program, and it worked great. And so when I came to the agency, I said, this would be a fantastic tool for us to use. And so I had already been part of it, but we really pushed it out.
We're currently preparing to go into an RFQ to receive SOQs for the on-call consulting. It's been 4 years and it's that time to update. And so what we offer before we start the formal process is any of the firms that are interested or have heard about the work we're doing and would like to be on that list, we give them the opportunity to kind of do a lunch and learn or to show up and show us what they have, their dog and pony show is what I call it, where they come in and tell us what their firms can do, and we tell them a little bit about the projects and who we are. And as part of that, we routinely ask, do they use Procore and do they use Bluebeam? And almost universally, everyone we talk to have access and use those on a regular basis now.
Anything, Gary?
Nothing. No, I'm. Thank you for the presentation.
That was excellent, and the technology just amazes me. And when you talk about whiteboard, Gary and I still look at that as new technology. But we're still blackboard age.
Are they going to have a room at the Smithsonian to show how this
works? I want to tell you, Courtney, one of the reason it's 7:30, and you said you like to limit us to 3 or 4 items, which is good for directors because we can't absorb too many. The quality of your presentations has so improved. And that really helps, I think, the meetings the understanding, and then I'm sure the ones that we bring onto the board, it really helps us. So they've been excellent.
And I will pass that on to staff as well. Thank you.
Thank you. With that, we've really done it. Thank you.
Thank you all.
We need to get you an official little hammer.